So this is Saturated Facts. This is episode number 8 or something. We've done a lot of them anyway. Where Lewis and I talk about some words and some interesting things. And occasionally, well, when I say occasionally, once we've had a guest on. But this week we have a fun pop-up from Richard, who's actually not done anything in preparation for this. Or, I mean, I don't even know if he's listened to any previous shows of this. Yeah. Lewis, would you put up blue mic, please?
Yes.
Is that, there we go.
All right.
There we go.
See, okay. Now he's actually... Yeah. The rest of the world can hear him.
Hello.
So this is Richard. He studies English with us.
Yeah.
You and Lewis don't really know each other at all. I am the intermediary force here.
I can't even see him behind the screen.
That's the main theme of the show now, though.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Me and Lewis... getting to know each other.
Yeah, that's exactly this whole show, listeners. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to hear people form bonds over the radio. Richard, people can't see you point at Lewis.
That was for you.
Oh, okay, thanks for that. Thanks.
I've forgotten my login.
Do you want me to come over and
yes,
do this?
Please.
Right, well, you keep talking.
I'll keep
you
talking.
And you and Richard have a little All chat, right. And I'll come over and log into SIS.
So yeah, Richard, the letters we're on this week aren't G and T.
Good combination.
Hence why we're all drinking gin and tonics in the studio. And the... Sasha is going to... Ooh, what did you press then? Sasha is going to start us off with a T word. Is that correct, Sasha?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't think about that. she's not at her mic anymore. And then we will kick things off. Thanks, Sasha. She's sorted out the technical side.
Well, yeah, I have. You still have to click on the SIS thing on there. Or okay. SIS, I don't know why I keep saying
SIS. I can do that.
Okay, right. Fact number one. I will do this while Lewis continues to wrestle with technology as he is wont to do. So my first word is tarantism, which I had never heard of before. And basically it's a form of hysteric behaviour believed to result from the bite of the wolf spider. The term is historically used to refer to a dancing mania, which originated in southern Italy, not disco. And it dates from the 11th century, where victims had a heightened excitability and restlessness, and they basically danced so that they wouldn't die. So I thought this was pretty weird.
Sorry, they danced so they wouldn't die.
Yeah, apparently the only way to cure this disease was to dance to music. I've got a couple of weird quotes from like this 12th century dude. Hang on, let me find them. Right, hang on. So, okay, when one is in the hold of this ill-wished beast, which I assume is the disease, mm-hmm. One has 100 different feelings at a time. One cries, dances, vomits, trembles, laughs, pales, cries, faints, and one will suffer great pain. And finally, after a few days, if unaided, you die. Okay? And then he tells of this this case of a peasant who had difficulty breathing, and his face and hands started to become black. And then someone brought along a guitar and started strumming on it, and immediately he started moving, so his feet started moving, and then his legs, and then he stood on his knees. Soon after an interval, he arose swaying. Finally, in the space of a quarter of an hour, he was leaping nearly 3 palms height from the ground. Sighed, but with such great impetus great that it... What? With such great impetus great that it terrorized bystanders. And before an hour, the black was gone from his hands and face, and he regained his native colour.
Wow.
That is the transformational effect of dance.
I've seen that many times.
Yeah, you go to Revs on a Sunday night. Much transformation.
I'm pretty sure
those.
The transformation goes the other way, though, by the time you come out. What is it recorded in history what song that man played on the guitar?
No, but this is apparently where the tarantella dance comes from, which is quite a popular dance form, I think.
Can you demonstrate it?
Yeah. I mean,
well, you know, it doesn't really work on radio.
She's demonstrating right yeah, now. Yeah. It's incredible.
What you're missing is under the desk, my feet are just all over the place.
Yeah.
And
so it's from the bite of a spider, did you say? The wolf spider.
The wolf spider.
The wolf spider.
And then the Wikipedia clarifies that it's actually probably not caused by the wolf spider.
Oh, really?
As if it was a real thing. Yeah. Just a heads up that the wolf spider's venom is not actually powerful enough to cause a dancing disease.
I mean, I was wondering whether the dancing was involuntary.
Yeah.
Is it a symptom or is it a recommended cure?
I thought, right, when I first came on this, I thought it was a symptom. I thought it was like you get really antsy and you just can't stop moving, and people are like, oh, it looks like you're dancing. But no, the cure is to just dance it out of you.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, when you break up with a guy, you're trying to get over him, you go out on the dance floor and you just dance it out.
It's probably something that isn't recommended enough.
Yeah,
exactly.
Doctors. Yeah, yeah. You suffer a bite from a black widow spider, just get up and dance and all will be fine.
I wonder if there's any medical science in it, in the sense of like maybe get your heart rate going. Sometimes that helps.
Maybe flush out the poison.
Yeah. I mean, in the quote where he's talking about like people throwing up and things at the same time, I can imagine that being a not pleasant experience. Dancing and feeling faint and just chundering everywhere.
Yeah, isn't that just you every Tuesday then?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's if you go to Cuda Tuesdays, I'll be there exhibiting the tarantella.
Yeah.
So that was my fact number one.
That's a good one.
Thank you. You sound surprised, Lewis.
Yeah,
as though I don't come out with bangers every single week.
My first word is a rather quaint one, I think. Gadzookery. the use of archaisms in literature. It's also known as tushery.
Tushery.
As in tush.
It sounds like Godzilla's like slightly strange cousin.
Oh, Mom, you invited Gadzookery again. obviously, Gadzooks, as I'm sure you know, is a mild oath.
Oh, yeah. Often indeed. I stub my toe and say, Gadzooks.
And the Gadzooks comes from, it's a sort of contraction of God's hooks, as in the nails that were through Jesus' palms and the cross.
Oh, I see. I thought you were saying that God just has really long nails.
Well, it's got like a pirate.
Yeah.
That's where Gadzooks comes from. And then the sort of archaisms you come across are, it means not words that are just not used anymore.
Yeah.
But words that you know what they mean. They're just weird to use, like thou and quoth and hark and thither.
I see.
And hither.
I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I say quoth all the time.
Yeah.
quoting, you know, some speeches at the Oscars and you're like, quoth Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think thou was underused.
Thou, yeah.
Because it's, you know, in French.
Yeah.
The kind of, the difference between tu and vu is really helpful in English. I feel like when I meet a stranger, I feel uncomfortable saying you. I'd rather say thou.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you get good, like, sweaty palms?
I do.
Just having flashbacks to last time someone was like, you're being very informal with me.
But I mean, if you meet the Queen, do you just go, oh, nice to meet you? Do you say like nice to
meet? I feel like you should be saying
nice to meet thou.
Nice to meet thou. Although nice to meet probably is a bit informal as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. It is a pleasure to be acquainted
enchanted.
With one.
Enchanted.
Enchanted,
m'lady.
Enchanted. I feel like that's quite a gentlemanly thing to do though. I don't feel like I could go up and be like, enchanted. I just come across like I was flirting with her.
I don't think anyone could blame you for flirting with the Queen.
She's a fine figure of a woman.
Matured well.
Yeah. But yeah, this is cool. So have you got any examples of this in, I mean, apart from what we've already said?
Well, I mean, not particularly. I was having a look, sort of Shakespeare, Shakespeare is not really the same because they weren't archaic when he was using them.
Yeah, yeah. And he created quite a lot of words as well, didn't he? Like bubbles and things.
Bubbles,
that's a Shakespeare word.
What did we have before?
I don't know. I mean, I assume washing up liquid and things wasn't as widespread, so you probably didn't get many of them.
But you could still get bubbles, by blowing through a straw into your Coca-Cola.
Straw, all those straws that people... Yeah. In McDonald's, you know, when you popped out to McDonald's in medieval England.
Stratford-upon-Avon.
Yeah. Also, when I was at primary school, we read, like, my first exposure to Shakespeare was, like, a modern English version of Shakespeare. And you just kind of lose the whole sense of it a little bit, I think. When you're and then Juliet, you know, popped in to visit Romeo, and you're like, oh, it doesn't have the same effect, does it really?
It's, I think you have to have it as old Shakespearean, just so you can have archaisms.
Yeah.
And the Gadzookery.
The Gadzookery.
Is lost otherwise.
That's cool. I'm going to look up what other words Shakespeare invented, because I want to know. I saw a thing about it the other day.
I mean, we had a poster on our classroom wall when I was at school with just every word in English was invented by Shakespeare.
It actually wasn't a language.
Yeah, we spoke French before Shakespeare started writing, and then it was
addiction, accused, blushing.
I mean, when we say he invented them, or did he invent them, or did he just kind of use them?
Well, see, what I reckon is that, what I reckon is that people used it in conversation all the time, and he was just the first one to write down in colloquial terms.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then everybody was like, wow.
Yeah.
New language. When in reality, it's just because we've never seen it written down before. Well, this is becoming very English literature-y, and it's probably not very interesting for listeners. We need to talk about something fun, quick.
What is your next one? Is it fun?
Is my next one fun? Oh, kind of. My next one is telekinesis.
Cool.
So we all know this from things like Carrie and, pulp superhero type genre things. But I looked it up. Give me a second if I can find it. Basically, there have been so many people who have been like, yeah, I can totally do telekinesis. And every single time, scientists have been like, okay, let's put you in a room and you can stare at a spoon for 3 hours and nothing has happened. There's one guy who did this. He was put in a room and failed like 6 times in mentally moving anything. And then he just went, sometimes I fake in front of the public, but I swear I can't actually do it. And they were like, okay.
Wait, so he admitted to faking?
Yeah, he was like, I got to keep my fans happy. But
there's always an excuse, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, you could just go
telekinetics.
Yeah, and they had there was one where they examined close-up footage of this guy who said he could bend a spoon I don't know, maybe.
I think it was.
Stop stealing my facts, Richard. and as when they viewed the footage close up, they could just see him exert pressure with his thumb on the spoon, just really like just simply bend a spoon as if, you know, when you're in the canteen when you're at school and you just go ha ha.
I always have I know Yuri Geller was outed as a fraud for that, but at the same time, that's quite some muscle strength in your thumb to bend a spoon straight over. I can see Richard now. He's moved out from behind the screen.
Yeah, I felt a little bit lonely coming back.
So, I mean, like, I'm not sure I could just bend a spoon.
I think it was the heat.
He warmed up with his foot. I don't know how much that would help, but maybe.
So are you saying that although he was a fraud, you don't mind because he was able to bend a spoon with just his thumb?
I think that should have been the show. Like, there was no need to
the
lie.
The man with the extraordinarily strong thumb. But I mean, if you think you can build a career on it, you would just spend hours working out your thumb, wouldn't you?
Why not?
I can make money off having a strong thumb. You just sit at home.
I tried to explain that to Mum. I was like, I have to play more Pokemon just to build up my thumb muscles.
She
wasn't having any of it.
She didn't buy it. No. Maybe she just didn't want you to be a fraud, Lewis. Maybe she just didn't want you to fool millions of people with your fake telekinesis.
Well, I mean, according to Lewis, people just love going to see people bending spoons with thumbs anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
Lewis would just say,
the spoon bender is coming to town.
People bringing out baskets full of spoons.
Bend my spoon. And they're just like, oh, it's bent now. I can't use it anymore.
And they have to wait until the spoon bender comes back next year to bend it back the other way.
No one else can do it.
Yeah, nobody has cereal for a year. I mean, most of the time people just used really thin thread, which apparently in Victorian times people just didn't think of. Nobody thought, incredibly thin thread, that could be how they're making this candle float in front of me.
I wasn't sure what you were referring to there for a moment.
Yeah, like fishing.
Like
fishing line.
Yeah, you didn't explain what the.
Sorry, between their hands.
Bend incredibly thin thread.
What?
That's no challenge.
Not like spoon bending. so they just had. I mean, I can't show this to the listeners. They just had a piece of thread between their two hands, and then an object balanced on the thread and went, "Ooh, look at me levitate this." Like tennis ball. And they also did it with air currents, which I'm more impressed with. I'm assuming they had some kind of like little tube with air coming out of it hidden in their sleeve, and then just go like place their hand above something and make it move along the floor a bit. Basically, and then there's a bit on this Wikipedia article that's like, evaluation, and it just goes, there is absolutely no proof that this exists. And until someone can come to us and actually sit in a room and move something with their mind, we will refuse to believe it.
I think that's a reasonable response.
Probably fair.
Yeah. But they do allow spoon bending. Just normal spoon bending. You'll be pleased to hear.
Did you ever watch Misfits?
Watched like the first few episodes.
Yeah. I remember there was a guy on that who had lactokinesis, which basically meant he had power over milk.
That's wow.
Dairy products.
There's a Mitchell and Webb sketch where the guy has power over biscuits.
Oh, nice.
A similar theme. Yeah.
To be honest, I would love that. Imagine sitting on the sofa, just beckoning some biscuits towards you.
Yeah.
Or cheese. Or a refreshing glass of milk.
But you couldn't bring the glass.
You'd just bring the milk out of the glass.
Well, you just have to drink it all in one go then, wouldn't you?
Oh, what? Just float it over?
Yeah, unless you could sip it in midair and then send it back to the glass from whence it came.
That's gross.
You could just make up all of the things in your life out of frozen milk, and then you could move everything.
I mean, if you added milk to things, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Just poured milk all over your clothing.
I can get the postman to pour milk over your newspaper in the morning.
Yeah. It might lead to a slightly unpleasant smell around the house, but you don't actually have to move at any point. So.
I mean, Magneto in X-Men. I mean, it's...
Magneto,
There's not much difference there.
Yeah.
Metal, milk...
Imagine if Magneto actually just could move magnesium.
Milk-nito.
Milk-nito. Anyone who's drunk, had cereal that morning, you have power over them.
Yeah.
McVitie-nito for all those biscuit lovers out there. That's cool. I mean, I'm saying that's cool about my own fact. But I meant the jokes that we are making from it are cool.
We are pretty cool.
Yeah. The actual thing does not exist. Sorry.
Okay.
What's your next word?
I mean, I've got one that definitely exists.
Yeah.
It's a myth. So Gemini.
Yeah.
The third star sign of the zodiac, May 21st to June 21st.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Gemini? Is this why you chose it?
No, I chose it because it begins with G.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good premise.
And it means the twins, as you may know, because it's those two stars that kind of... I mean, I don't quite know what makes them look like each other, as to my... untrained eye, stars look pretty similar.
Yeah.
But these particular stars...
And I would say that there are quite a few stars that sit beside one another in the solar system.
Yeah. I've also never actually been able to, map a star sign just by looking at the sky.
No. Someone once tried to tell me, and for about 20 minutes, I would go, there is Orion's belt. And then I walked away from the spot that we were looking at and just couldn't find it ever again.
I think I've sometimes seen the plow or the saucepan one. I don't know what...
But to be honest... The saucepan one. But to be honest, I mean, these were mapped in times when people didn't have television. So they just probably spent a lot of time looking at the sky and going, I can kind of see a bear.
Whoa, a bear? Sweet.
Let's make this a personality defining.
Okay, so the twins that Gemini twins are Castor and Pollux, which is the name of the stars as well.
Yeah.
Of Greek mythology. And they were born after Zeus... turned into a swan and carried out some foul play with Leda so that she gave birth to an egg from which they hatched, along with Helen of Troy and Clytemnestra.
But they were all in the egg?
Well, actually, there were two eggs. Boys in
that
one,
must
girls
have been
in another.
A terrifying sequence of events for Leda.
I think, yeah.
Giving birth to an egg must have just been...
just not what you're expecting.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would have assumed that I just hadn't digested them properly. Like, I'd eaten some eggs, and then they just come back out again, and I was like,
I don't know how big the egg... Like, to fit two babies in an egg, we're
that's
talking
pretty
hefty.
Large egg.
Big egg. Oh, that's a terrible, terrible thought.
So, it varies whether they're both the son of Zeus, or whether one of them is actually the son of... Tyndarus, Leda's husband.
Okay.
So, but they're still twins, even if they have different fathers, apparently.
I wonder what Leda's husband said when she just went,
I've
given birth to two eggs.
He was probably like, have you been hanging around the chicken sheds again?
Prove they're mine.
And so they were Argonauts. That's one of the things they did.
For a second in my head, I was like, astronauts? Amazing. No wonder they're stars. Okay, no,
they
were
Argonauts of Jason variety.
Yeah.
And but their main story is about them and their cousins, who were also twins, called Lynceus and Idas.
Okay.
And so Lynceus and Idas are engaged to be married to two twins.
So it's twins and twins.
Twins galore.
Yeah. I mean, this story loves twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so these married, getting to marry these two sisters. And then Castor and Pollux, yoink. And then they steal the sisters. and marry them themselves.
Have they not learned from Zeus that stealing women is not an okay thing to
do? Well, clearly it gave them their lives, so maybe
they're like, oh, we were born from it, so we should just carry on in the exact same fashion.
So thus starting a family feud, according to Wikipedia.
Okay.
But this doesn't stop them going on cattle raids together. So the four sort of cousins.
Classic weekend bender.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Going out, rustling some cattle.
Go down to Leeds and go on some cattle raids.
The train to Leeds with the lads.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they sat around, they kill a cow, one of the cows they just rustled, and they're eating it. And Idas is like, hey, we know we were going to split this herd 50-50. Whoever finishes their dinner first gets the whole herd. Oh, and everyone's classic. Like, oh, yeah.
Eating contest.
But what they didn't count on is the fact that Idas is massive. And he eats his and his brother's portion.
Oh.
Which is half a cow.
Yeah, big lad.
That's a hefty appetite.
Yeah, like, he wins the herd.
I feel like you could probably go to a restaurant in America and get
yeah.
get like half a cow eating competition.
And so the Castor and Pollux vow to get revenge on their cousins after they've been duped out of their herd.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I would probably just go on another cattle raid somewhere else.
Yeah. But they think, you know what, we're getting these cattle back. And so they come to steal them from Lynceus and Idas. But they get in a fight. Castor is wounded. Pollux kills Lynceus. And then just as Idas is about to kill Pollux, Zeus zaps him with a thunderbolt.
Zaps him.
Because Pollux is Zeus's son.
Yeah.
And he's like, no big half cow eating man's going to kill my boy. And so Pollux runs back over to Castor dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh no, my twin, who we catch from an egg together. And Zeus says, Pollux can either be a god or give half his immortality to his dying brother. And Pollux is like, I'll do the second one.
Can you give half immortality?
Well, what happens is they have to they move between Olympus as gods and being dead.
I'm imagining this is like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire setup, where they're like, you can give half your immortality, or can I phone a friend?
Oh god, the pressure. Can I phone a friend? Who you want to call? Castor. He's the one who's died.
50-50, yes, this is the question we are asking. So they just spend their time like moving between two divorced parents.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
A bit of time in Olympus, a bit of time on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Do they grow old or are they...
No, they're immortal, okay. But they're in hell in a way.
Mm.
Okay. I mean, for me, that's a pretty sweet deal.
I think they've done all right.
Yeah.
And that's why they got to be stars.
I see.
Because it's all about brotherly affection. Would you give up your godhood to be...
I mean, I've got four brothers.
Oh, so you'd have to split it.
I have to
five
split.
Ways.
It's like a Horcrux. Yeah. How far can you go before it's too far?
One fifth immortal.
Yeah.
You get to spend every second Sunday in
heaven. Yeah.
I don't want to go back.
It's your brother's turn.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know if I have that compassion. But there we go. We've all learned a little about Sasha today. Yeah. That's quite cool. I didn't know that. I don't really know the provenance of any of the horoscopes, to be honest. I didn't know that. I don't know what Aquarius. I'm Aquarius. I don't know what Aquarius is. I'm vaguely like, ooh, you are meant to be arty. But okay. I don't entirely buy into that, obviously. It's not like I read my horoscope every week. Will I do my next... I forgot a really fun fact about telekinesis. Can I backtrack slightly just for a second? Okay, so in the 1980s... I'm going to try and find the Wikipedia page again. In the 1980s, there was these things called PK parties. Because it's also called, like, parakinesis or something. And basically what they did is loads of people just gathered around an inanimate object and screamed at it for a long time, hoping something would happen. I can't find the... I can't find the description of it. Just trust me. It was really cool. Oh, I've got it. Okay. PK parties have been described as a campaign by paranormal believers to convince people of the existence of psychokinesis. where groups of people were guided through rituals and chants to awaken metal-bending powers. They were encouraged to shout at the items of cutlery that had been brought and to jump and scream to create an atmosphere of pandemonium. So critics were excluded and participants were told to avoid looking at their hands. So I assume that that means that the organisers of the parties were actually just bending the... just spoon-bending and be like, don't look down. Don't look down, now you can look.
Whoa, you bent that spoon with your scream.
Thousands of people attended them, and many became convinced that they had been they had bent silverware by paranormal means. Mm. Anyway, sorry, I needed to put that in there. Everybody needs to know about PK parties.
I think end of term after essay hand-in, PK party.
To be honest, by after essay hand-in, I'll be happy to scream at anything, any inanimate object.
It might help midway through the week, actually.
Yeah, de-stressing PK party.